Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? This is Wednesday evening at the 8 o'clock hour, 8 to 9 p.m. at the 8 to 9 p.m. hour, if you're looking for the K Thompson Live Show, you've got it. I am the person that's commonly known as the Sun. Citizen Payne is the name that you can call me. And I'm in. My mom is on a little vacation in Bermuda. She might be calling in, and we'll get the news from across the world. But first off, let me welcome our co-host, Brother Byron Saunders, is on the line. Byron, how you doing this evening?
My brother, I'm still fighting my cold, but I'm getting better. I just wish I was in Bermuda. What can I tell you? Okay.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So, it's good the host, she's there and enjoying it, and I hope she sends us back some more warm weather. But, you know, it's been an interesting week, if to say the least.
Interesting to say the least. Mr. Yeah. Giuliani is at it again. He's the gift that keeps on giving.
I'm telling you, he's like herpes. Right.
Yes. Yep, I guess you could say that too, my man. But yeah, I mean, just to listen to this guy talk and kind of, you know, says a line, and someone says, "Well, that's not true because you did this, you did that," and he'll just kind of gloss over it and say, "Well, never mind that." But what about? It's kind of, it's really just some crazy stuff. And on top of that, to think that Kim Jong-il is coming to town. That, I mean, him and Trump, that they should be a pair. And
yeah,
this guy,
got
them to release these Americans from North Korea. So, you know, he said people are saying
show.
He should get a Nobel Prize.
Yeah,
let's get Brother Wayne Gilman in here, legendary newscaster. Wayne Gilman, how are you this evening?
Good evening, gentlemen and lady. How's everyone doing?
Yeah, we're all doing good.
Still getting over a call.
Oh,
I'm sorry to
hear
that.
My mom is in Bermuda on location.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry I missed that. Lucky her.
We're just talking about the kind of the interesting. How the ex-mayor there is the gift that keeps giving, Wayne.
Well, he's certainly been coughing up to the news cycle generously, and it's amazing how this man has figured out a way. It's just embarrassing what he's doing to represent his own client. That's number one. It's unfortunate that most Americans are just really unfamiliar with his history. And the thing is, particularly as it pertains to New York, his level of subtle racism or blatant racism, and then you have the whole issue with Trump. You know, I mean, they have done more, and this is why I'm like really really concerned as to what happens if we get as far as actually having this man impeached, because there's so much divisiveness in this country. There's so many people that seem to tend now to support him, even his poll numbers are up. But, you know, I still feel that, you know, the worst is yet to come out. And how do we resolve this problem? I mean, there's a reason why a Chinese company is making a ton of money outselling Charmin and Cottonelle with Trump toilet paper, you know? And I'll be the first to say, and I'm sorry to get so decadent so early, but, you know, I've applied for some. You know, I mean, it's like I can't believe how baseless, how crass, there are not enough adjectives to describe, you know, what this man has done, and yet he gets away with so much. You know, it's like the fake news campaign is, you know, it's basically, you know, having an impact on his core, and they just seem to applaud him. But I just feel that it's going to be just a year from now where we actually feel the impact of what this man has done. I mean, the price of oil is going up because of his breaking away from the agreement on Iran. You know, every time he gets a chance to say something despicable about what Obama has done, you know, he seems to sneer in a certain – he's trying to cultivate and further polarize this country beyond what it already is. And it's shameful, and it bothers me. And, you know, I need not – you know, continue, because, I mean, we've been saying this for, like, months now, and I just wonder the impact of Mueller's investigation now. He's gotten me to question, you know, when do we come to the epilogue? When is this thing tied up and, you know, and worse yet, I mean, not to, now that you got me all wound up, Schneiderman here in New York, the attorney general. I mean, if there were someone, you know, at least prior to what we found out this past week, who was in the driver's seat to bring about, you know, further evidence about what Trump, even Giuliani, has done, for that matter, he would have been the guy. And now the Republicans are, you know, they're sitting back, and they're having a big laugh as to what we're going through now, having to pick a new attorney general. Try to pick up on the campaign, on the investigations that he's been conducting, and you know, I just hope that I hope the Democratic Party is united come November, and we got the message going that people need to come out to the polls.
Right. Well, I mean, the way that the other side operates, they're trying to make polls obsolete. I mean, if you really think about it, I mean, that's. Trump's such a big admirer of Putin, and we know that Putin doesn't really like his elections to be too competitive, so to speak. So, you know, Trump,
yeah.
I wouldn't anything past these guys. And now you have this breaking news about Michael Cohen selling access, or having some Russian oligarch that he was selling access to, and various major companies. So it's a whole bunch of, you know, they drained the swamp so they could refill it with their own
crowd.
Their own
You're
crowd,
right.
Yeah. And,
the cronies.
You know, this guy is, the New York Republicans, I think, really stand at fault a little bit, because they knew how Trump was. And they let the rest of the party, the rest of the country, buy into his act. You know, and it's kind of putting them in a bad place. But, I mean, for their extreme ideology that they seem to be taking, the tone that they seem to be taking, it seems to be working out so far. I mean, this guy, he's got these people coming back from North Korea and got this meeting with Kim Jong-un or Il, whatever his name is.
Yeah. The thing is that it's still early and you know, he wants to go down. Like, I heard him say something, eloquent today, but I'm just amazed that it even came from his lips, that, you know, there was a question posed to him about all the speculation and talk about him receiving a Nobel Peace Prize, if he could just, you know, anesthetize the world tension, you know, with what's going on in Southeast Asia there between the Koreans and the Chinese and the Japanese and all that. And then, you know, look what he's doing in the Middle East. You know, he feels that if he can stand like the world's biggest bully and try to see if he can bring about some sort of anesthetizing the tension in that corner of the world, that he'd be worthy of something. But I don't see that happening. I really don't see that happening. And thank God that those members of the European Union are not caving in, because, you know, and there's been a lot of interviews this past week on cable TV about the impact of what he did today. And immediately we're going to feel it with oil prices. You know, those of us who live here in the Northeast, I mean, especially in the winter season and have to pay for oil, you know, I see where we're going to go back to, you know, tremendous sums of money, you know, having to spend monthly just to heat our homes, a question of doing that or eating. You know, health care, anything that Barack Obama has done, it just seems like he is just hell-bent on destroying it or putting his own spin and moniker on it, you know, to make it look like as if it was his doings.
Their whole...
It's shameful.
Has never, I mean, it's not one to kind of consider the least among us, right, the least among us in society, you know. I mean, I'm almost thinking this is how they kind of thin out the herd, their idea of thinning out the herd. I mean, as we talked about today on the news, you found out that they're cutting back money going towards the CHIP program. So, you know, and this is kind of a news piece to go with Jeff Sessions in true Klansman form, making the announcement that, you know, any of these people trying to cross the border illegally will be separated from their children. And I'm just trying to figure out and this is kind of, you know, this is a particular type of, I mean, I suppose, you know, if you tell people that, then you're trying to prevent a deterrent, right? But I think if it happened a few times when people got prosecuted, the word would get out. But it's just that is a kind of a theory, a kind of practice that a certain segment of the population has practiced throughout the centuries, wanting to separate people, to tear families apart, you know, and it's unbelievable. It's a particular amount of evilness that you have to have in you. You think that, well, I know we'll get their kids, you know, and
right,
and obviously that's the most valuable thing to people. And mentioning that, like I said, you can see the idea behind it being a deterrent, but just so much goes in line with the type of individual this guy is. And really the way they choose to deal with people, certain people from certain ethnic backgrounds, you know, it really is kind of remarkable what the programs that they try to install or reinstall, I should say. You know, it's unbelievable.
But, you know, guys, listen. Let's look at statistics and numbers, because there's a certain part of this that the media and the public continue to get played by Trump's administration. His base is 30%. It's a minority. And even though he's talking about his numbers are going up, where are they going up? That Quinnipiac poll that he's quoting is like, it's not really adjusting to the distrust and the upheaval that he's causing even in his red states, because his trade practices are creating a trade war within the agrarian red state, and they're going to feel this. So it's like, wait a minute, before we jump on the banner of like, yeah, his polls are going up, he wants to get the Nobel Peace Prize, I say, hold on. Stop 1 minute. Let's really reassess where this is coming from, because he's still lying. I mean, there's a pathology amongst him and everybody in his administration that is a liar beyond belief. They lie about everything. Did you not see the confirmation hearings of the new CIA director sitting up there in the middle of telling us that she had no control over IT information coming out of her office? I'm like, wait a minute. There's a protocol for IT every time IT changes in the federal government. Every time IT changes, there's a directive that's sent out to every personnel from top to bottom. And you mean you can't answer that question? Uh-uh. I'm not buying it. Don't buy into it. Because it's all television. Come on now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course.
You know how this game is played.
Of course.
If we get locked into the PR mechanism, we're buying into the matrix.
Thing too, Byron, that I find disturbing is that this talk now about limiting the number of people who can cover Donald Trump. I heard Huckabee the other day say something to the effect that this, you know, that they're considering limiting the number of people who are going to get press credentials to be participants in the White House press corps. And, you know, it's like, again, they're above the law. First Amendment rights don't matter. The only thing that matters to them is the Second Amendment, and that's it. And it just bothers me that if there is a filter on what goes out, this further, you know, basically expands their galvanizes their ability to even have people who are in doubt. I mean, you know, we're an exception to the rule. The three of us, we scrutinize, you know, whether you had a journalistic background or not, it doesn't matter. But the bottom line is, we see and we're looking at what's going on before us, and we know what has passed. There's you know, a sense of history, you know. But I'm looking at the average person out there who still feel that to a certain extent this man should be cut a pass. And I'm just saying, what is it that you see that I don't get to see? You know? And I admit,
okay.
I don't watch Fox.
Well, neither do I. But every New Yorker knows a three-card Monty when he sees it. Okay?
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, the rest of the country doesn't see the game being played in front of them. All right? Now, when the wool is pulled off of their eyes and they take their sunglasses off, and they're right now their insurance rates are going up, gasoline is going up. And by the way, with all of the money being made by Wall Street, how come minimum wage has not risen? These are the questions.
Well, let's not get back to that argument.
Well, but this is because
the press is
being played by the administration. They're playing this game with them, and they fall lockstep into it sometimes. And unfortunately, because the media is owned by corporations like Rupert Murdoch, Fox TV, like Bloomberg Industries, that's another cable industry, like Sinclair, that's another one, and all of them are the news reporters getting their paycheck from where? See? When you start to filter through all of the BS and the games that are being played, when the prices start going up, there are no jobs that are being, I mean, so we go to 3.9 unemployment, but that means those are all part-time jobs. There are no full-time jobs in this country.
Every
corporation that is engaged in capitalism is not interested in raising the minimum wage because they get cheap labor from overseas. All of this is not about to change just because Trump wants to spill this game that he's playing, because corporate America, and I mean, we live in New York, okay? Wall Street is not about to raise its minimum wage. It's not going to happen. Those jobs are not going to come back. I don't care if they opt out of NAFTA, and they're going to opt out of the Global Warming Initiative. They're opting out of the Iran situation. And guess what? Let's really get real about the nuclear proliferation. There are four nations that do not sit at the table for the Non-Proliferation Act. You know who those nations are? And they have nuclear weapons. Israel,
ooh,
India, Pakistan, North Korea, and guess what? Even South Africa has been said to have nuclear weapons. So Netanyahu, who gets on the television and spews the information that was fed to him so that it could make it look like the Iran deal was not working, is playing the shell game. Come on.
Well, you have to remember that Israel is also the 52nd state, you know? I mean, regardless of what administration is there, you know, unfortunately this country caters and the thing is, it's all political. I think the people who reside in that region, you know, the Palestinians and the average Israeli, that they get along. It's just that you have these splinter groups that are hell bent on power, and it becomes a contest back and forth. And I'm not saying that, you know, they should not be helped, but, you know, clearly Netanyahu is a hawk. Trump is now surrounding himself with hawks. Pompey,
yeah, exactly.
What's his name?
Bolton.
God, I can see his friend Bolton. Right, you know.
Bolton. Yeah.
I mean, they want to send this country to war so badly, or at least, you know, start some confusion, and I guess, you know, again, I think next year is just going to be telling. If he survives this year without an impeachment, and if we don't get some balance in Congress somehow, you know, it's just going to be all out war, man. It just saddens me. And every one of his people, every one of his cronies, Ben Carson is another one that sits up there, and he feels he's above the law and does things to, you know, that base against goes against the pale, you know, bringing his family involved. And even though there's been a lot of bickering and complaints amongst Republicans about how he's running HUD, no one is putting a stop to it, you know. The fact that he's cutting back on certain programs, you know, just to say that he's doing something, because it's beyond my – if you're any kind of sensitive person of color and see what goes on around this country and how hard it is for people who are homeless. I mean, we have a crisis here in New York, and you're going to cut back further than what we already have. And as far as the minimum wage is concerned, I know it's been talked about. I don't have any empirical evidence before me, but I thought Cuomo had approved or rubber stamped an increase, you know. And I don't think Christie did. I'm not sure, but you know. But again, it's a regional thing in the country.
Right, but Cuomo's a blue state. He's a blue state.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
right.
It's not going to – the impact here is that, yeah, we can raise the minimum wage here, but we're talking about in Kansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, Wisconsin,
their teachers out there can't even make a decent living. Support rent, you know.
Thank you. So what we are being witness to is that in the media market – you see, our media here is not the media you get in Kansas, in the Midwest, in the Southwest.
Right.
Okay? Because they're controlled by Bloomberg, Sinclair, Murdoch. Okay? These are the corporate media moguls who are controlling the message.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Now, but they can't control the outcome. If the message is being controlled, when those rates are going up, health insurance rates are going up, gasoline is going up, can't keep a job, got to work four or five jobs, teachers can't get paid. And you know what? Middle America, and here's where we have to look at history, because now, gentlemen, what is the Southern strategy? How long has that been in play?
A long time.
History. Thank you. What is the Southern strategy? To return the states' rights issue. So what do? You hire everybody as a secretary in labor, HUD, commerce. Every one of those individuals in there are incompetent for one specific purpose, to render the agencies of the federal government incompetent.
Yeah.
And when you do that, the only people who will be able to survive this globalization of make America great again concept, the only people who are going to be able to save America are the people who've got the 1%, who got all the money, because the states are going to be bankrupt. The federal government,
right.
And it's a simple formula of taxation. Every politician will tell you, if they can't take in enough taxes, they can't spend what they ain't got.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And boy, we're being taxed to death
concept.
Already.
That's right. Basic governmental concept. So it's not a secret. what we have got to engage in is the underground concept of being able to keep information like what we're doing and conversations like we're engaged in, keep that alive, because it's information like what we're providing to wake up people and make them realize that they are being bamboozled. It's a game. Mm-hmm. It's a shell game.
Yeah, it is.
And
yep,
once they
really
get
is.
And let me tell you, yes, it really is. And so every time we get a chance to rebuke what's being stated, is to show the real facts. Facts of what's April Ryan said something very important today when she was talking about how her badge is vetted way beyond anybody else, because you get a seat at the table in the press room, you got to go through some serious security checks. Okay, and it is incumbent upon our reporters to begin to rebuke what they get in that room. They need to stand
up
to Sarah
Huckabee
and let her know you're lying to us.
Yeah.
They're playing this game that's really too polite. Oh, my God, they're so polite.
I was wondering that myself until I realized perhaps it's about access. Perhaps if they get too inquisitive or too investigative reporter or try to get to the bottom of the story, perhaps they'll lose their access, you know?
That's what Huckabee Sanderson is talking about. You know, they want, and the
right.
deal is, if you notice, they don't call in April anymore, you know?
Right.
Even if she raises her hand when 45 is up inside there, you know, for different conferences and things like that, she's certainly not invited to. You know, it's like they're going to make a sacrificial lamb out of her because she's a person of color. And with all due respect, I mean, she's held that position at AURN, but the impact of AURN on the rest of the country is the problem. If there were more media outlets that carried April's message right here in New York, can you think of one station that's has her report on a regular basis? I mean,
especially now that there are
no black owned stations.
Yeah, I don't even know what AURN is.
Oh, the American Urban Radio Network. I'm sorry. You know, that's who she works for. And they're based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm sorry about that. And basically, April Ryan has held that position for a number of years. There was a guy that preceded her who used to be chair of the White House press corps, the late, great Bob Ellison. And after Bob passed and they went through some changes, the American Urban Radio Network is a black-owned operation based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and they had a number of stations that they used to beam to. I can't remember the last time I heard a report, or I haven't gone anywhere where actually they would actually carry their message, and a lot of it is just filtered down, you know, and it's unfortunate, you know, and again, we have to look at the FCC and the suppression of information. It's all deliberate.
Sure.
And in spite of what's going on, you know, when I look at the inner city situation, and I don't even want to get started on that, you know, because I was there for such a long time. It's unfortunate what happened. And there are all sorts of stories and speculation and reasons as to why. But even they, to a certain extent, whether it was managed properly or not, you know, there is no real black voice, and yes, we have a number of publications, but are we reaching the audience that we once had? Are the demographics are the same? Everybody's splintered up, you know. And that's the problem. And then you have the impact of the internet, you know, social media, and I'm not sure
right,
of all the sites that are out there that are being well read. Or promoted,
right?
You know?
Well, that's the point you raised exactly the result of the backlash or result of technology. Just like all the other networks and TV stations are so splintered now and so much area that you can go to for content, that's, I guess, has a double whammy effect on black communications, because the few that we did have, where which were the stations or the personalities that people live to, listen to, excuse me, to all get the information at one point, you know. Previously, when we just had three networks, it was that collective viewing that everybody had. You know, one of the three networks, you watched one of the shows on one of the three networks, and everybody collectively at the same time saw these shows, one of these shows, right? So now everybody's not collectively receiving the same amount of information. Everybody collectively is not seeing stuff at the same time, usually, for the most part. I mean, everybody's viewing habits and listening habits are so splintered. So in that, if you were to have one main news source for black, like the Urban Radio Network was the main news source for black people, and then it gets splintered up because there's so many new platforms now and different people
right.
coming out and want to start their own news gathering platforms, you know. That's, I mean, where you kind of get we kind of suffer that, like I said, that double whammy for us as black people. And I guess the way to combat that is probably to have more news sites that are reputable. So at least they're all, when they do report the news, they're all reporting the same facts, so that whoever reads it across the board, you know, is getting the same facts. Go ahead.
I agree, Eric, and again, I don't mean to cut you off, but I mean, I'm reminded of a conversation I had about 15, 20 years ago with a guy. I never really got to work with him. I admired his work when he was a WABC All-American DJ. I'm really dating myself now, when ABC here in New York was a rock and roll radio station. But the late, great Babalu Lewis Schwartzman, Babalu. He was a DJ, very popular. He didn't even have to be a DJ. He had a master's degree in psychology. And the deal is that he had said something to me once. I was trying to compete for a voiceover audition some years ago. And he said that AM radio, stations that were as powerful, all these AM stations, should all, this is prior to him even segueing to FM, because FM had more of a refined listening medium for music and things like that in conversation. But he said the reach that some of these AM stations had, and they were designed that way to get to states where people couldn't get farm reports. WABC you could hear in communist China, you know? LIB on Skip back in the day, you could hear it. I used to get letters from people in England, you know? If these media, if we owned only one or two of them in the market, and one was or both of them AM stations were dedicated to providing regular information on the community, because everything in news, as far as I'm concerned, is local, but it's relevant to everywhere that we reach. You know, to me, it's a disservice if we cannot use these outlets, you know, just to reach the ears of people who need to understand at what stage in time we are in, and you know, the risk that we're taking by not being informed. And that's what bothers me. And the deal is that, again, we even play into the nonsense when we're playing gospel. No disrespect, not because I'm Catholic. I listen to a little gospel myself. But 24-hour bombardment of the same nonsense, you know? I mean, or the station that should be devoted to providing information makes no sense to me, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not just this market, but it's around the country. I'm just using New York as an example because this has been my experience. But I never forgot what this guy told me, and as I look now, and we're talking 25 years ago, 30 years ago, and yes, mostly FM is music driven, but we still have quite a few outlets that are, you know, are still doing that on the AM band, and there's a vacuum There are people who are not being reached, and that's the issue, even with social media.
Well, yeah, one thing is certain, guys. The pay-for-play situation with Cohen. Now, I'm going to take you guys back because you guys, especially you, Eric, Citizen Payne, the Godfather. We all remember the Godfather. You remember that episode? It's probably the first one, I believe, where they're sitting down there in Cuba, Havana. And what was the gift that AT&T gave to Batista? And why did he give that gold phone to Batista? He gave him the gold-plated phone because he wanted access and consideration. So $200,000 last year was paid by AT&T to Cohen for what?
Access and information.
Thank you. You've got to keep exposing information like that, which begins to connect the dots, because there's so much collusion all over the place.
Yeah.
Influence peddling. This is what's
going on in our nation.
And the media
buys into that too.
That's right. Yes, they do. And why did they pay $200,000 AT&T? Because they're trying to merge with Sprint. Hello?
Yeah. Right.
And they didn't get it, did they? You see? Because there's a point of which the thugness of this administration is mafia. It is.
Oh, yeah.
We've been down this road before. We are seeing it played out in the government because the Chaffacanos and the Gambinos of yesteryear with the Jewish and Italian mafia, this is well past them because they were just trafficking in drugs and prostitution and gambling. This is influence.
And you
this
know what, Byron, as you mentioned that, what I find despicable is that Rudolph Giuliani basically carved his teeth as a district attorney in the Southeast District here, finding elements, you know, in, you know, not to label him because he's of Italian descent, but the bottom line is that this is what he did. He was at one time promoting himself for having put the mafia to sleep. We all know it still exists on some level or the other. You know, I mean, and it's not just relegated to one ethnic community. There's several different ethnic communities engaged in the same kind of practice, and that's it. But it just amazes me how at one point in his life, he was like the paragon of virtue and trying to show that, you know, we're going to do the right thing and stop this illegal behavior. And then you got today's Rudolph Giuliani, who doesn't seem to give a damn about anything other than his agenda and that of the White House. That
and,
helped
and he
his
doesn't.
Client. Yeah.
Okay, he doesn't. He doesn't care. He's in fact, that the question why they couldn't bring Rudy in as the State Department secretary and other jobs in the administration is because he would have to explain how he went from making what $250,000 a year as mayor of New York City to increasing his income and his wealth by $5 million. How did he get that?
Yeah,
see, he's on the dole too. And, I'll put one more piece of information out there. Here's work with me on this, fellas. Who's the world's most dangerous state exporting terrorism?
Russia?
Think about it. No. It's the one who's the leading arms merchant. The United States of America.
The United States, yeah, I was just going to say.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It ain't Korea. It ain't China. It isn't Russia. Russia's wealth is so focused into a couple of people. The oligarchs that are there, the Russian people are suffering too. So it's not like the Russian people are reaping the wealth of its country because Putin and his oligarchs have been doing the same thing that Trump is doing here. And remember this, people, every one of Trump's businesses has gone belly up. even when he financed his own campaign, he had to file bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Got to connect the dots.
Yeah, that's
well,
it. And yet he manages
he
to escape, not, you know, he doesn't reveal anything that he's done with his taxes, you know, and it's okay with the party in charge, you know. That's the thing that really gets to me. Nonsense like that.
Yeah, right, exactly. Now, what I heard today is even more disturbing with respect to Iran and the nuclear, trying to prevent Iran from engaging in its nuclear quest for nuclear power, nuclear armament, whatever, is that we are prepared to arm Saudi Arabia with nuclear weapons just to combat Iran. I go back to what I just got through saying.
Yeah,
the world's
yeah,
most dangerous
yeah.
state exporting terrorism is the world's leading arms merchant, United States of America.
Right, right. And what's sad about that is that there are going to be so many American lives, young lives. I mean, it just – we went through this in the beginning of this century with Bush. And of course, Bush makes Trump makes Bush look like as if he was a choir boy. But I think the problem with Bush, as I look back then and I said it then and I say it now, he just had – a bunch of henchmen around him, you know, like the Vice President Cheney and all those, and he didn't really take much direction from his old man. But the bottom line is that I just can't see where we're not going to be involved in some sort of military exercise, you know, before this administration should last another 3 years. Something's going to give. And I know those Iranians are suffering now based on what's happening, and I don't blame them, you know, for rebelling. I just hope that, you know, the European Union could just hold it together until this man comes to his senses or something could be worked out. But he's not worthy of no Nobel Peace Prize. You
not
know,
even close.
As far, yeah, you know, I mean, that's the thing that really gets to me. And, hey...
Now think about it. I'm going to get real. If I can get a little crude here, we got a president and the first lady, gentlemen, the first lady's new initiative, Be Best. Now, I'm going to take you back a couple of years ago. Let's go to Oaktown. You know Oaktown, Oakland, California. The issue was Ebonics. I be,
right.
You be, we be. Now, we got a first lady in the office creating a new paradigm, which she borrowed from the Obama administration because the pamphlet only upgraded the graphics of the telephone to make it look like it's today, but it's the same pamphlet that the Obama administration put out. So now we got a first lady who's speaking ebonically, be best. I be best, you be best, we be best. And then we got her husband who's a pimp who's paying off prostitutes. She's the hoe and he's the pimp in the White House. Now, I can get crude on this even more, but let's face it, with the facts are the facts.
Yeah,
he
I mean, I don't know.
Nefarious perversions, worse than Bill Cosby.
Yeah, that's
be
another
honest,
story.
That's another whole story.
Yeah.
And they're trying to clean up their act now because they happen to be the first lady and the president of the United States? I don't think so. You know, you put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is that, you know, I want to say, and I feel sorry for her in a sense, but it's still guilt by association, and she need not be a part of that association. I don't know.
Exactly.
I'm assuming she's getting paid well. Because it doesn't seem to be a normal marriage. I don't get the sense. You know, there was no question, no doubt in my mind. I mean, I wasn't there to witness Michelle and Barack, you know, in their most intimate moments. But, you know, clearly, they loved each other. They still love each other. I shouldn't say Selig. it's the past tense, what have you. But the bottom line is that I can't imagine anyone ever questioning the love for each other that they had there and the example that they set for so many Americans, not just black Americans, but the whole country. These two, you know, this is not the first time that she has stole something from the playbook of Michelle Obama. And, all right, if it works, it works. But at some point, she's in a tight spot, man. You know, I don't know. The patient has
kind of
stage 4 cancer, and there's nothing that can be done, you know?
Right.
I hate to say it like that.
The profile that's really, really what we need to really focus in and narrow in on this country is that the profile of a bully, okay? The bully's profile is of a bully. Bully. Okay? Trump is a bully.
Mm-hmm.
All right? His profile suggests in order to make America great, you got to play the game he wants you to play with his baseball, his
bat,
you know,
right.
or you don't play the game at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it will never bring peace anywhere, only chaos everywhere. And we are in that situation right now, and this what we're engaging in globally
absolutely.
Is the chaos because it's the bullying of nations who may desire to play in the ball game, but they can't get the equipment, they can't get the players because at the top of the list is the person who is holding all of the cards and the aces. So I can withdraw from the Iran deal because I got the nuclear weapon. I can play that card anytime I want to. I've already done it twice, so I'm going to rule by fear and dominate.
Yeah. And the sad part about it is that I think Americans have become somewhat it's not even so much despondent, but they don't react. There's a word I'm looking for and it escapes me right now. But basically it's like they're you know, ambivalent about what goes on with the prospects of death and war and all that business. You know, it's like whatever he says, they're willing to go down the road and continue to drink the poison until it directly affects them, and that's it. But I don't know. I mean, life is so precious, and it doesn't matter where we go. It shouldn't be about staging this game. And one thing I will say that he's absolutely right about is the fact that we don't know what President Kim is going to do with respect to this. I mean, I don't know what sort of deals that they've worked out, you know, and the problem is that I'm not saying that the tension is needed, but at any moment that script could be flipped like he did with Iran, and we're back into the same can of worms, you know. And
Take you back to the wild, wild west, and every treaty America ever made with people of color, we have broken it.
Yeah.
Every treaty.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So we walk away from another treaty, and, you know, we really don't care what Kim Il-sung does because we still are the bully on the block. He wants to go to a nuclear war?
Yeah.
Come on, bring
right.
it, because we'll wipe you off the face of the map. That's the bully concept.
That's what he told him.
But I think right now, you know, we've been lucky. We have not had since the Civil War any kind of – well, I can't even say that now because we had 9/11. But I think anything else that should happen, especially if it's on the nuclear level, the United States, parts of the United States are going to be affected. And, you know, that blood should be on this man's hands. You know, because I think we suffered enough with 9/11. Was it justified and go do what we did in Iraq and Afghanistan and places like that? Yes, there was a need for correction. But Dick Cheney was making big bank money off that last war. And I don't know what the game plan is. Yeah, you know. And that's the problem. We have all these hawks there, and if they're not examined thoroughly, you know, like now that it's come out about Sean Hannity being one of America's biggest slumlords, You know, it just amazes me. You got to do the research. And then they got the campaign about fake news. I can't listen to them and so on and so forth. And that's the problem. That's the problem. If ever there was a need for more dialogue and discussion, regardless of your political affiliation, it is now.
That's that Karl Rove playbook. Accuse the other side of the exact thing that you're doing. And that's what started with George W. Bush during his time in office, and the Republicans have continued to use that. Certainly Trump has perfected that with his consistent lying, as well as accusing people exactly what he's doing. And, you know, it's interesting to see how little decency these people have just as long as they get their way. I mean, there's a certain amount of evil to people who are just willing to lie to get their way and to make up an ideology based on a belief system that is immoral and is kind of anti-people. I mean, I don't know how you could live a hateful lifestyle thinking that another group, other people are inferior to you, but that's the way these people seem to want to live. And certainly the brunt of the American experience, receiving the brunt of the American experience, has been African-American people, you know, and our oppression, our continuing to fight against the oppression that we've been experiencing in this country for, you know, what, 400 plus years now.
Yeah, quite some time.
The lengths that to which these people are willing to go to preserve a system and a way of life that's based on keeping a group of people down on top of everything else as some sort of kind of income, finance, economy-generating system on top of a social system, you know, is just really, you know, and then everything else is justified, right? They justify everything else. I mean, the treatment of the first African-American president, the treatment of people, of different types of people, as they try to gain their rights in a society that at least gives lip service, saying that all people have rights and all people are created equal, but we know it's not. Clearly this was a society built on some sort of pecking order and some sort of hierarchy. And in that hierarchy is based on the skin color and the supremacy of white-skinned people, as well as combining that in with money and power and that status, because you know, there's certain members of you know, like we were talking like a couple weeks ago, you know, Italian people I guess weren't considered white, right? We talked about ethnic whites considered, you know, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, you know. And I remember having one of my father's business partners tell me that, an Italian guy, that he wasn't considered white. It was a WASP. White angles.
That's going back a while, but that's true. You know.
So
before we give up on all hope and keep hope alive, guys, because let me tell you, under the cloud, the silver lining is this: there are more of us than there are of them. And if we continue to recognize the power of our numbers, we will overcome all of this.
Agreed.
And we are overcoming all of this. So we must keep encouraging people to register to vote, encouraging people to get out from off behind the PlayStation, get into the proactive community, go to your community board meetings, get civically involved, create a groundswell of an initiative of the revolution that will not be televised is the revolution of truth.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Keep speaking
truth to wisdom,
and power will be yours. I guarantee it.
And, you know,
I was
going to say we have something that we have to do for ourselves. You know, it's not to say that righteous people from all ethnic groups can't help out. Certainly, you know, there's white people that think the whole kind of white supremacy, white skin privilege is just ludicrous. And there's white folks that recognize that and work equally as hard as, I guess, African Americans to try and, you know, get that out of our society, you know. It's just that, you know, when you talk about put the PlayStation down and stuff like that, you know, more of our folks need to really focus on what it takes to come up again and to rise, you know, because the distractions of the world are real easy. You know, all we got to do is ride through the streets, man. You take a ride around and you see the majority of our people are not in the best circumstances as opposed to where they are in life, in their life,
right.
from a social economic status. And the negative, and I guess this is something in life, period, it's so easy to go with the negative. It's so easy not to try and to give up and just go the least common denominator. I mean, I'm thinking of my grandmother's house where that property now is kind of hard to sell because, you know, on the same block, there's a lot of drug dealers, you know, and there's people that live on the block that are selling drugs. And it's like, don't you want your neighborhood? You know, I remember the hustle back in the day when the hustlers, when they were hustling on their block, they didn't hustle on their block. They kept their block straight. At least there was some sort of, there was that code. But now it's like individuals don't even care if people are walking down their block, people that might have been their neighbors that they might have grown up with. They don't care if those people have fallen to drug addiction. And they seem to be wanting to feed that. That's what I'm talking about.
That, when you peddle death, that's what you get. You got to keep
peddling.
Well,
I tell you one thing. That is one. Go ahead, Byron. I'm sorry.
I'm just saying, death has its own playbook, and you know
that.
That's true too.
And let me tell you something. A lot of the developers do that to eradicate
and
a whole
neighborhood.
Right. You know,
but you know what I'm
and
saying
that's
as a property owner, Wayne. You know what I'm saying, though, right?
Yeah, I saw that go on in Brooklyn and Harlem. Now, you try to go out and buy something down there now, you know?
Right.
And this is where we have to stand firm and hold on and lock arms and say, this ain't going to happen to us, you know? And we need to correct the ills. And I'm not saying that we all have to go out and risk our lives with some of these people. But the bottom line is that, you know, you do the best you can to hold on until the circumstances change. And trust me, they will change because half the time, developers are the ones planting these bad seeds so they can ultimately have control. And if they don't have control, their children will have control. I don't know where your grandmom's property is, but I've just seen this played out so many times.
Right, right. Well, we've got just about 2 minutes left, gentlemen. And I'm glad we're able to get into the weeds a little bit with the Trump in the ear. We didn't get that deep into the weeds because there's always something new with this guy. So, you know, it's like everybody's got to be on 24-hour watch with him. And I guess that's where a lot of the citizens of the country just get bombarded with information. So I want to say thank you to everybody for listening into the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, coming on every Wednesday live, 8 to 9 p.m., and our show is also archived. I want to say thank you to our brother, co-host, resident historian, Brother Byron Saunders. Brother Byron.
Remember the quotes of Frederick Douglass. We got to get back into the streets and get off your chairs and remember that righteousness is a victory. So stop being in denial. Peace and love always.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, brother. Brother Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman, Mr. Wayne Gilman, as always, it's been real.
It's been a pleasure also. I just want to, you know, echo Byron's sentiments as well, that we need to be more righteous. We really do.
I hear you, brother. Well, thank you, Wayne Gilman, coming from the newsman. He's seen a lot of it, so until next week, Wayne. Take care.
Okay. All the best, Eric. Byron.
Bye-bye. And want to say, that's what we need to do. You know, Malcolm X, I believe it was, says freedom is responsibility. And we got to take care of our own. And we also got to be alert and stay woke. Want to say thank you to everybody for listening to the Kay Thompson Live Show. Listen to us again next week. We will be live again. Or you can listen to the archives. Got to go, everybody. Take care. I'm the son, Citizen Payne, on the Kay Thompson Live Show. My mom will be back next week. Take care.